Sairam, and welcome to all our listeners to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang, where we shall be continuing on Dr. John Hislop's book, Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. We'll take off at that point where we stopped last week. And the conversation, as always, is interesting, is deep, is insightful, is light, lighthearted. It's a beautiful mixture. It's a feast that has been served to us. And we must be grateful to the devotee, Dr. John Hislop, who has recorded all of these for posterity. Briefly recapping where we had stopped last week, it was a point where Hislop asked Swami about the efficacy of chanting the name of the Lord, how it should be done. And Swami answers it indirectly. In fact, Swami takes it to another perspective. And Swami says that when God comes in a human form, it's very difficult to see Him as the Lord. One sees the body, then one sees that body, then one's own body, and one cannot but relate the two and put the body at the same level as oneself. Basically, Swami says that God comes in a human form so that you relate to it. At the same time, it is imperative that we remember who the Lord is and not mistake Him to be one among us just because He eats like us, sleeps like us, talks like us, and moves around with us. Because as Swami says, if He had come down in that glorious form as described in the scriptures with multiple hands, heads and all the weaponry, people would not be able to feel kinship with Him. People would not be able to associate with Him. Because as we see, we always tend to associate with like-minded means, you know, even in humans, even among humans, we like to associate with those who belong possibly to our mother tongue or our country or our kind of cultural background. So that instinct to always bond together with similar people who are similar is very deeply inherent, and that's why Swami says that God comes down in the human form. So after that, Hislop once again says, Swami, but I would like to again come back to the name of the Lord. Can you tell us more about that? So that is where our discussion will begin from today. But before we dive into that, let's offer our most humble, grateful and loving pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. And let's welcome Brother Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind and Sairam to all our listeners. And as you said, the discussion was about the name and the form. And in fact, one very beautiful point that Swami had made, and last week we had made a mention of that, is when Hislop asked Swami, what about the form? You know, how do you think about the form? And Swami gave a beautiful reply. He said, it is distracting to think of the form when you're trying to do some work, when you're in the middle of some work. So doing it with the feeling that I'm doing it as an offering to God, Swami said, that is the best way to look at it, or looking at the work as you're doing it as a representative of God. Swami said, that is the way you contemplate on the form when you're doing some work. When you're meditating, it's a different thing. And then, of course, Swami went into that importance of God coming down in a human form and how that helps us in our spiritual progress. And thereafter, this important point about where Hislop asks about chanting the name of God. I think this is a discussion which had occurred a couple of times back also, and I think we'd made a mention even then, the background from where Dr. Hislop comes. Hislop comes from the meditation process called Transcendental Meditation. I think he has done some courses in Hatha Yoga or something like that. That's sort of a background he comes from. And most of these do not as much emphasize on chanting a name or thinking of God, you know, doing Namasmarana in that sense. So I think it's a genuine query from Dr. Hislop to understand where Namasmarana fits into one's spiritual sadhana. And that's why I think he's repeating the idea of Swami, why repetition of the name is so important.
You know, when you were saying about the form being distracting, it is so, so true. Personally, I have experienced this. You know, you'll be making a video, and for that video, you will think that you need a photograph of Swami in such and such a pose, in such and such an era, in such and such a place, whatever. And you go into the huge database and try to start searching. Many times it has so happened that though I would have allotted about, say, 15 minutes for the search, by the time I'm done with the search and I'm out, it would have been an hour almost, because it is so difficult to, you know, just focus and pick up one photograph of Swami and go ahead. Each photograph, you look at Swami, you look at all the time, it is so beautiful, so captivating. You're searching for one smile. And when 100 smiles come up, you want to spend time admiring each of those smiles. You know, possibly I'm looking for a photograph which is black and white, possibly in the 1950s and 60s where Swami is smiling. But as I'm searching for Swami smiling, you get Swami smiling in the 1990s. 100% you know for sure that that's not a photo you're going to use there. But you just can't help, you know, sitting there and looking at it and feeling that love in his eyes. It's so magical. For those few moments, you get very nostalgic. You remember Swami. Sometimes tears well up in your eyes. Yes, it's a very positive and beautiful experience, but technically, yes, it's a distraction. So, positively or negatively, I think God's form becomes a distraction in this positive sense, I feel. But nevertheless, with that distraction, the work is not done. The work doesn't get done, and therefore Swami says, at that time, avoid it, because duty is God. When you're doing your duty, duty becomes God. So I just remembered that is what happens. And I see that now thinking of the distraction has become a distraction from the topic.
In fact, there is this very beautiful episode in the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, as depicted in most of the dramas on him. He was, before he took on the name Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was used to be referred to as Nimai. And they used to call him, I think, Nimai Pandit or
Nimai Chand.
Oh. Right. Because he was a scholar in Sanskrit, and he used to have his own students. He used to teach them about Sanskrit grammar and all of that. And slowly he starts getting intoxicated with the name and form of Lord Krishna. And this drama, I think, what was enacted in front of Swami and directed by Swami himself. Mm. And I think you don't need anything more for the authenticity of the incident. Mm. There, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one day he's in the classroom and students are sitting in front of him. And suddenly he says, I see him, he's running there. You know, the boy of the blue complexion and something. And he starts running after that person. And suddenly he realizes that he looks around and he finds himself in this classroom. And he says, oh my God, I've become so, incapable of doing my duties because I'm getting lost in this name and form of the Lord. Mm. And he looks at his students and says, I'm really sorry. I think I lost myself for a moment. And then the students tell him, Master, this has been happening for months now. This is not the first time it is happening.
Oh.
You have not taught us anything for the past few weeks. You start a class, but then you run away like this and you either fall into a faint or, you know, we just find you just singing his name and running away. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, I don't think I can teach you anymore. If you want, I'll teach you this. How to be lost in the name of the Lord. I think only that I can do right now. So all his students, you know, they had become so respectful of their guru. They knew that, you know, they had a lot of reverence for him. And so they all become his disciples in this path of Namasmarana, which he then begins. So in that sense, I think when Swami says, don't think of the form of the Lord and lose your work, I think when it happens very naturally, it's a totally different thing. You know, that is what is referred to as Madhura Bhava, what the Gopikas went through or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went through. That's a different thing. But for those of us who are still very much connected to the world and have duties to the world, at that time, Swami it's a very beautiful and profound message that Swami gave, that you can just do it as an offering to God. And that will set right a lot of things, as Swami would say. The moment you say it's an offering to God, you would say yoga, karma, su, kaushalam, you'll come, you'll have to do it perfectly, you'll have to not compromise. And then you'll automatically do it with a sense of detachment. So Swami is giving a beautiful way of thinking of the Lord, meditating and still doing your work. But when it happens that nothing else can be done but to contemplate on his name and form, I think that's a different blessing altogether.
Absolutely. And one can only aspire that as we put in efforts to remember his name and think of him, think of his teachings, someday we will also get lost in that bliss, because I'm sure each one of us have experienced it to different extents. When we get lost in the love for Swami, either the temperature, the hunger, nothing seems to matter. Everything seems so insignificant, and his name, his love, winning his grace alone becomes so important, and it's such a beautiful state. We only pray that we one day we reach that state and we are able to sustain that throughout the life. It is possibly the same kind of motivation with which Hislop is also asking the question. He says, "May Swami please tell us more about saying the name of God." Then Swami responds, "Here's a small example. A man had to pass through 20 miles of forest at night, and he had only a small lantern that lit about a 3-foot circle. He put down the lantern and started to cry, for he could see only 3 feet. Some travelers came along and asked the reason for his sorrow. They exclaimed, 'But sir, if you walk carrying the lamp with you, if you can see only 2 feet ahead of you, it is enough. And you could travel in that way through the 100 miles of dark forest without trouble. But if you leave the lantern where it is, you cannot move at all in the dark forest.' In the same way, the name of the Lord may be written in the book you are looking at, but you may find your way only by using the name. The name should be woven into the breath so that you are calling on him all day long. So hum. He am I. He with the in-breath, I with the out-breath. Or Sairam, or the name of your choice, said with the movement of the breath. Breath is form. Thus the name and the form go together."
Beautiful analogy which Swami would often say, you know, the name being the lantern. And if you look at it, it's got layers and layers of meaning. One thing which Swami would often say is, you might think that the name is so small. Swami would say it's only 2-syllabled name, Rama, Krishna, Sai, Jesus. And Swami would say that, and you would wonder, life is so complicated, how can this one name help us in any way? And Swami would give this example, you know, you to cross a path of 2 miles, you only need a lantern which shows 2 feet ahead. And a very similar analogy that Swami is giving here. The other way of looking at it is probably from where, you know, Dr. Hislop is asking. He's asking about the spiritual journey and how chanting of the name can help. Because when you talk of the spiritual journey, you talk of it as, you know, annihilating the ego or moksha or overcoming your desires or whatever it is. And probably it is not logical to understand, it's not logically easy to comprehend why, how chanting a name is going to help you in any of this. When Swami says it's going to help you, you know, give enlighten your path just 2 feet ahead, it can also mean in whatever spiritual, stage you are in at that point in life. For that, the chanting of the name will help in a certain form. Sometimes you're in that state where you're emotionally attached to Swami. We know that chanting of the name helps in a certain way. You're in a place where you need to mentally stabilize yourself. You're trying to do some sadhana. You're not able to, you know, we had spoken to Brother Ranganath Raju, where he was saying that he was trying to do meditation and he was not able to. And he said chanting the name in the form helped to stabilize his mind. So it's like Swami saying that whichever stage of your spiritual journey you are in, at that point, the name, chanting of the name helps like the lantern which enlightens two feet ahead or around you.
And I can very, very strongly vouch for this with my own personal experience multiple times. And as you rightly said, Prem, it's not about it helps only spiritual growth or progress or gives spiritual relief. Mundane problems, it might be a person who is bothering you, it might be a situation that is very worrying, it might be the health of a dear one, you know, any problem. I have found that within half an hour of focused Namasmarana, any problem's burden becomes lighter automatically 100% of the time without fail. This is my personal experience. That's why, you know, like Kabir Das said, dukh mein sumiran sab kare, sukh mein kare na koi. Everyone thinks of you in times of distress, never in times of happiness. I must say that even doing that, even thinking of the Lord's name only when in trouble and not the other times, even then it helps. The name of the Lord is so selfless, because the Lord is so selfless, the Lord is pure love. He is such love personified that, you know, even if I think of Swami only in times of difficulty, because I have thought of Swami at that time, the thought comes and helps. And I have seen it every time, and every time when I am in trouble and I have resorted to chanting Swami, I chant the Sai Gayatri, that's my favorite. I have resorted to that. I see the relief coming very quickly, and within days, in a magical manner, that resolves itself. That time I take like a vow that, hey, you know what? I should continue with this. I should keep chanting God's name every time. But sadly, the moment things become comfortable, things become happy, things become fine, I get back to my not chanting. I stop chanting till the next problem comes. So nowadays I feel that maybe problems are like Swami's way of reminding what is important in life. You have to keep doing, because I seem to be doing it only when I'm in trouble. Maybe if I start doing it continuously, I feel I'll not have any trouble at all. And this is the insight that even Kabir Das shares in that same Doha in the second line. He says, Jo sukh mein sumiran kare, dukkha hai ko hoy. Those who think of the Lord in times of happiness, where will they ever have times of grief? So it is so beautiful, so practical, and I feel it is something that can be very easily done. And as Swami says, any name, because all the names and all the forms, whatever we think of God, belongs to the same God.
You know, I was just talking to a few devotees a couple of weeks back, and I was telling them this very thing. Hmm. And if we do a self-analysis of the different times when we take Swami's name, not in the sense of greeting, when we start doing Namasmarana, you will find that, you know, you take to that name to solve most of your mental problems or aberrations. You know, I used to recall as a small kid, the first instance I remember of doing Namasmarana regularly is when I'm playing cricket and facing a fast bowler. Right? Because that's the time you're probably most endangered at that age. You know, you've not gone through any other trouble as worrying as that. So most of us chant Swami's name when we are afraid of something, you know, when we're worried about something. Hmm. And it's so spontaneous. And as you said, it just takes 10, 15 minutes for you to realize that you suddenly find some kind of a courage from within, or you're able to overcome that particular thing. Similarly, many times you would find that, you know, I mean, I sometimes find that when doing work, when you're trying to work something and your mind is scattered all around, you tell yourself, no, concentrate. And then you tend to, you know, think of Swami or think of Swami's name, because you associate Namasmarana with concentration. Hmm. Right? Similarly, you'll find that, you know, as youngsters, I remember as teenagers, bad thoughts come, you'll start thinking of Swami's name. Hmm. Because it's very difficult to think of both simultaneously.
Like bad thoughts and Swami.
Right? Because you know that, or you get angry with somebody, or you start getting negative thoughts about somebody, you automatically say that, you know, I don't want to be negative. You automatically turn to Swami's name, because you know that's the most positive energy exuding name that you can think of. So I think in that sense, Swami is saying it is not only in which stage of your spiritual progress you are, whichever emotional or, you know, turmoil that you are in at that moment, the name can take you out of that particular situation. As Swami would say, I think in one of the discourses very beautifully, Swami says, what is worry? Worry is mentally created fear only. Mm. Right? So half the time the problems in the mind are in the mind. They're not in anywhere outside. They've not yet manifested, at least. So Swami says the chanting of the name is probably the best armor that you can have to deal with any situation you are in at that moment.
And you know, speaking of the name of the Lord and the lamp, I'm reminded of the analogy that Swami would often say, that the Lord's name is like a lamp on the threshold of a house. You know, Swami says that lamp illuminates the interior of the house. It also illuminates outside the house. So too, Swami would say that the tongue is a threshold. And the name of the Lord on the tongue will bring illumination within and also bring light, love and laughter outside as well. You know, it brings about that joy everywhere. That is the beauty of doing Namasmarana. Swami continues to say, you know, after saying that breath is form, thus the name and the form go together. Swami says, breath is life. Life is God. So therefore, breath is God. The name of God and the form of God. Now, just before this, Swami says that you're taking the name of the God, Sai, Ram, or any other God of your choice, along with the in-breath and the out-breath. So Swami says that the breath becomes the form of the Lord. And Swami is giving a logical explanation for the same. He says, because your breath is life and life is God, therefore breath is God. The name of God and the form of God. Breathe God, see God, eat God, love God. The name of God will illumine every step of your life and take you to Him. The name must be said with love for God. I'm sorry. the name must be said with love, for God is love. If the breath is said with love, then life is love. There is no Shakti stronger than love. If it is said with love, the name of God, any name of God, Ram, Sai Ram, Krishna, Jesus, Soham, that small name will open up and illuminate the whole of life. For the one who desires to realize God, only the name is needed. The ocean is vast, but a huge steamship is not needed to go on the ocean. Even a small tire will take one on the ocean. So Swami says, don't get confused or fooled by the small size of the name of the Lord. Just like a small rubber dinghy or a tire is enough for you to keep afloat in the ocean, you don't need only a huge steamship. In the same way, however small, the name of the Lord is enough, because inherently the name of the Lord keeps you above the waters of Mohamaya, the waters of the Bhavasagara. It keeps you, the name of the Lord keeps you at a vibrational level that is above and beyond the worldly level. So therefore it doesn't matter about the size, it's about the inherent property. And the inherent property of the name is to make you float.
Right, and you know, that statement that Swami makes here is so beautiful. He says that, you know, when you take the name of the Lord with love, then that moment gets sanctified. If you're able to breathe only out of love, because Swami is saying that to chant the name you need breath. At the same time, if you can just make every breath of yours filled with that love for God, your entire life gets filled with love. You know, and this, of course, is something which Swami often says, and many times when you look at it, whether we acknowledge it or not, Swami would say that each one of us are a person on the spiritual journey. We might not call ourselves a devotee, we might probably call ourselves agnostics, we might call ourselves, I'm not a person who is thinking about moksha or mukti or any of that. But Swami says everybody is, whether you agree or not, acknowledge or not, you're going towards that direction. So everyone is actually in the quest of finding out what is that thing that I have to do to at some time reach the goal, right? And I think Swami himself is saying this, and this is probably one of the most consistent things that Swami has said. We know from even before Swami declared the avatarhood, when he started the Pandari Bhajan group, you know, that was something that Swami kept throughout his avatarhood. If something Swami emphasized, it was Namasmarana.
Interestingly, the Dhyana Vahini, as the name suggests, it is about dhyana, meditation. In that, Swami speaks so much about the name of the Lord. You know, even just cursorily glancing and shuffling through the pages of the book, you will see the Lord's name repeat about 100 times in the book. Because in that also, Swami says that just taking the name of the Lord is enough. And Swami says there, others will tell you that it is not enough. They will tell you, you will have to meditate, you will have to do tapas, you will have to stand on one leg, all that. But I am telling you it's enough. So therefore, don't try to ask anyone, don't tell anyone. Just do this. It is enough. I mean, it is such a powerful reassurance. Swami says nothing else is needed. In fact, I don't recall from which, whether it was from a Vahini or from a discourse, that one brother shared with me a very interesting perspective. He said that, you know, we know this famous story of how King Parikshit, when the time is transitioning from the Dwapara Yuga to the Kali Yuga, he comes across a cow or a bull, is it? I mean, he comes across a bovine creature. I think it's a bull.
Okay.
Standing only on one leg. And the general interpretation is, with the in the golden age, that is Satya Yuga, the bull is supposed to have had all its four legs. And they're supposed to stand for, yagna, japa. Yagna, dhyana, japa, and one more. You know, those are the four legs for dharma, it is said. And with passage of each yuga, one leg is chopped off. And with the arrival of Kali Yuga, it is standing only on one leg. Traditionally, this is interpreted as how in Kali Yuga, you know, dharma has lost three of its legs. It's on its final leg. Literally and figuratively, it's on the final leg, and anytime it might collapse. But what Swami has means what this brother shared was a very interesting perspective, where Swami says that it shows that in Kali Yuga, just one leg is enough for dharma to survive. And what is that? That is Namasmarana. See, even if nothing else is done, even if Namasmarana is done, dharma will survive. I feel this is a very positive, reinforcing and empowering perspective, because it says that with the passage of time, Kali Yuga is a time where just Namasmarana is enough to make the dharma sustain. You need not think about standing on one leg doing intense penance and tapas like the sages of yore. All you need to do is Namasmarana. As you rightly said, from Swami's childhood days till the end, possibly the thing Swami has emphasized over and over and over and over again is Namasmarana. And that is what he's doing again over here. Because in the same Dhyanavahini, Swami tells it with another example. He says that the Lord's name is like a magnifying glass. I think Swami said it here, we discussed it last week also.
Right.
It's like the magnifying glass. It's able to focus the mind onto one point. Otherwise, the mind has this tendency to wander from one thought to another thought. In fact, if we are simply daydreaming, we just sit, we start off with one thought, let us seed a thought in the mind. 5 minutes later, what we will be thinking will be so far away and so different from what we started off. Because the mind is like that, it flits and jumps and keeps going about from one theme to another with the slightest connection. From banana, it goes off to a monkey. From the monkey, it goes off to your visit to the zoo. From zoo, it goes off to Singapore where the zoo was. And from Singapore, you go to some other trip you traveled. And within 10 thoughts later, you are so far away from the first thought. No wonder it is said that the thought is fastest. It travels faster than light, because it goes anywhere in such a fast time. And Swami says, for such a mind, the best remedy is Namasmarana, because it becomes like a magnifying glass that focuses. And with focus, you can achieve great things. Because Swami says, with a magnifying glass, you can actually burn a piece of paper, whereas with just the sunlight, you cannot do that. Because that is the impact of focus. That is the impact we will see in our lives, in our growth, when we do Namasmarana.
Right. And of course, one of the mentions that Swami makes when he's talking about Namasmarana is what Swami says about the Soham Mantra, which Swami has spoken extensively about. Mm. Swami is speaking of that also as a name of God, that also is something that can be chanted. So I think from there, Hisla passes his next question. He says, the question that he asks is, in respect to repetition of the name of the Lord, what is the relationship between Sai Baba, Sai Ram, Soham, and which form is to be visualized for each? I think maybe before we go into Swami's answer, and it's a different topic altogether, probably we'll take a short break, dear listeners. We'll come back. We'll of course repeat that question again, and then we'll see what Swami has to say in reply.
Swaroopini janani ma prema swaroopini janani ma prema swaroopini janani ma charana namostute sai Swaroopini Janani Maa. जगदम्बे कृपा करो साई मां,
जगदम्बे कृपा करो साई मां,
जगदम्बे कृपा करो साई स्वरूपिणि जननी मां, चरण नमोस्तु ते साई मां, प्रेम स्वरूपिणि जननी मां, जगदम्बे कृपा करो साई स्वरूपिणि जननी मां।
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स, जस्ट बिफोर वी टुक दैट ब्रेक वी रेड आउट द क्वेश्चन दैट हिसला पास नेक्स्ट. He says, in respect to repetition of the name of the Lord, what is the relationship between Sai Baba, Sai Ram and Soham, and which form is to be visualized for each? In response to that, Swami says, Sai Baba is the physical form. Sai Baba also means divine father and mother. The syllable Sa means divine. The syllable I means mother. Baba is the word for father. Sai Baba, therefore, means divine mother and father. Sai Ram represents the same form as Sai Baba. Soham does not have a form. It means I am God. Just as a person has several names, but they refer to the same body, the repetition of the name with form is at the beginning. Later on, one worships the omnipresent, transcendent divine. If one sees God as the essence of every person he meets, it is also appropriate to say Sai Ram constantly in the mind, because then the diverse forms merge into the Sai Ram form. So that is Swami's response.
Swami says that just like a single person may have multiple names. This is very interesting. We often heard how Swami says all the different names belong to the same God. Swami makes it even more clear with an example, saying that a single person might have different names. At home, out of love, the parents call him or her something. The youngsters might be calling him or her something. The official name might be something else. So, the names are all different, but it refers to the same one. In the same way, Swami is saying, here also, whether it is Sai Baba or Sai Ram or Soham, it refers to the same God. So, Swami is saying that first you start by, you know, seeing, if one sees God as the essence of every person he meets, it is also appropriate to love Sai Ram constantly in the mind, because then the diverse forms merge into Sai Ram form. So, there also, you know, it's like saying when you are seeing God in all, that also let it be your personal deity, the name and form that you are attached to. Because it becomes very difficult to get that feeling possibly for a God who is nameless and formless, the omnipresent God. So Swami is saying, in the beginning, when you're trying to see God in all, let that God in all also be the name and form that you love and you adore. It becomes easy. It helps. It will then help to merge the diverse forms into the form of Sai Ram. It reminds me of an experience that is quite popular of a devotee by name Hal Honig, where he has also received this kind of a message in through a discourse from Swami, wherein Swami is saying, see Swami in all. And therefore, once when he's traveling late in the night, I think it's in the metro in New York.
Right.
He's traveling alone, and a very menacing looking man gets into the tram, gets into the train, and there's nobody else there. He walks up to him. Hal Honig is able to see a switchblade knife in his hand. And even though his heart is trembling with fear, credit to him that he is able to remember what Swami has said. And at that point in time, he starts radiating Swami's love to this person. And his experience changes. It becomes a very transformational experience, because as that person comes near, because he's become an instrument to transmit Swami's love to this fellow with a dagger, Hal Honig offers to him the sandwiches that he's eating. And he says, would you care for a sandwich, sir?
Yeah, I think just, Hal Honig had the habit of making sandwiches and distributing in the in the metro and to the homeless people.
He had that, yeah. So a few sandwiches were left.
Right.
And he offers this to that man, and just that one statement has a magical impact on this person. His eyes moisten and he becomes very touched. He sits down next to Hal Honig, gently eats, sits and eats those sandwiches, puts the switchblade knife inside. After that, when the next station comes, just gets up, turns around, tells thank you to Hal Honig, and then gets down from the train. So, there is a magic that happens, when we are able to see Swami in all. A few days back, my mother gave me a very, very beautiful advice. She said, many times what happens is, we are not able to see Swami in some people. You can't imagine how Swami can be so nasty or so bad or so irritable. So it becomes tough for us to give love, because though theoretically I want to see Swami in a person, I'm practically not able to see Swami in the person. So she said, at such point in time, what you do is, don't give your love to that person. Don't. But remember that all of us have Swami's love, and Swami's love is selfless. So you tell Swami that, Swami, your love, she said, you give Swami's love. And that somehow that made it so much more easier for me, that I'm not giving my love to the person because I don't like this person. But yeah, Swami's love I can give, because Swami's love is for all. So I tell Swami, your love. And it has the same kind of impact. I don't know whether it transforms the other person. Like even in Hal Honig's case, I don't know if the other person stopped using his switchblade and robbing others. But you have a transformative experience. You see the power of love. You see the power of God's love. Because, I'm specifying God's love because, as I said, in many scenarios, like in Hal Honig's case as well, it becomes tough for him to possibly share his love. And I think that is what even Phyllis Crystal has shared about an experience in an aircraft during a hijacking, where, if I'm not wrong, she radiates Swami's love. She says, Swami, I'm diverting your love to the hijackers.
She actually says the very thing what you were just saying. She says, Swami, it's very difficult for me to love that person, seeing how violent he is. But I know that if you were here, you will be able to love that person because you have that ability. So let your love go to him, but let it flow through me. That's the prayer she makes.
That's such a beautiful thing because it makes you feel that, yeah, this I can do. You tell, you know, see Swami and all, and because we love Swami. If I see Swami, definitely I'll express my love for him. And now see Swami in such a person and express that love, I'm just not able to express my love. But yeah, Swami's love, Swami's capable. When we do that, it helps a lot. And, you know, that is what I think Swami is saying here. And, yeah, that's what he's saying because he says, if one sees God as the essence of every person he meets, it is also appropriate to love Sai Ram constantly in the mind because then the diverse forms merge into the Sai Ram form.
And, you know, when Swami is saying here that all names reach him, I think there are plenty of experiences where Swami has proven this, that all prayers reach him. And one of the most beautiful episodes is narrated by Dr. Deepak Anand, one of our seniors and professors at a university. He narrates how, you know, when they were doing research, there were four research scholars. We know them from the MBA department. Swami would call them for every guest who comes for serving them or if any work is there, Swami would call them. And we would always see them going together. So once he was saying that all of a sudden Swami sent word for them at 7 in the morning or something. And those were the pre-mobile era. Mm. You know, so they had to make a call through the landline and they all got dressed ready, quickly and they came. And by the time they came to Mandir, Swami had already come for darshan and Swami was inside the interview room. And I think the elders who were sitting there, they said, Swami has left word that if you come, you can go inside and sit. So these four boys go into the room. And the moment they open the door, Swami is sitting there with his eyes closed. But Swami, you know, opens his eye, acknowledges that they are coming in and Swami has seen them. And Swami again closes his eyes. So they all sit around Swami. And I think Swami sat like that for about half an hour, 45 minutes.
Eyes closed.
And his eyes closed. And then again, Swami opened his eyes, looked around, and then again closed his eyes for another 15, 20 minutes or something. And no words were spoken. So they were waiting and waiting and waiting. And after that, Swami opened his eyes and, you know, very beautifully Swami smiled. And Swami explained to all of them that what day is it today? Swami asked him first. So they said, Swami, it's a Tuesday or whatever day of the week it was. Swami said, no, what date is it today? I might get this date wrong. I think 7th August or something was the date they said. So Swami asked them, what is the significance of this date? So they said, no, Swami, we don't know. Then Swami said, this was the day on which the nuclear bomb was dropped in Japan. I think Hiroshima. Right? 7th August is the date, I think. Or
6th August.
6th August. Okay. 6th August was that particular day. And Swami said, this was the day on which the bomb was dropped in Hiroshima. And right now in Hiroshima, people are gathered. And they are having a candlelight prayer. And they are praying that henceforth, never in any part of the world, such a disaster should occur. And Swami said, I've received that prayer and I've blessed them and I've come. So then these boys said, oh, Swami, is it in the Sai Center that the devotees are doing? Swami said, no. Some people have got together and they are praying to their own gods. So Swami said, I went to receive it. You know, very beautifully, Swami saying that wherever, you know, a pure-hearted prayer is made, it doesn't have to be addressed to Sai Baba or Sai Ram or something like that. And the other beautiful way in which, I mean, the way it was narrated, Dr. Geeta Mohan Ram narrates that very famous episode of her giving vibhuti to that Hispanic lady when she goes for a Broadway show. That's, I'm not narrating the whole incident. I'm sure most of our listeners will know about it. The beautiful thing is, you know, the whole episode happens and she completely forgets about it. So I think about 6 months or 8 months later.
I think that is where a janitor is praying to Jesus.
Right.
And Swami comes in a dream and tells her that at such and such Indian a time, an Indian lady will come ask for ash.
Right.
And that's how that janitor receives vibhuti from Geeta Mohan Ram.
Right. Yes. So she completely forgets about that episode that it has happened. And when she comes to Parthi, as always Swami calls the family for an interview, and the first thing Swami asks is, how is the Broadway show in New York? Right. And then she realizes she actually missed much of the show because, you know, she was witness to this beautiful show happening in the washrooms there. Mm. You know, Swami was revealing his omnipresence. And she very excitedly, she said, you know, Swami, this is what happened. And Swami said, yes, yes. And then Swami told, you know, the daughter is fine now. Right? I think it's a girl. Mm. Swami said the daughter is fine now. She didn't need a kidney transplant. I think that was a problem she had, a lung transplant, a kidney transplant or something. And then very excitedly, Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram said, Swami, she was not even praying to you. You know, she was praying to Jesus. And she was saying the way Swami said, so casually, Swami said, Ye pirate yemi. He said, what does it matter what name it is?
Mm.
Right? The way Swami is saying here, one person might have multiple names. And, you know, if you and I can have multiple names, I'm sure, you know, in school you would have had a nickname. At home you'll have a nickname. You know, nickname, you know, and we respond to all the names. And then what can we say about Swami when he says all names, you know, belong to me? So beautifully, you know, Swami is saying here, for doing Namasmarana, this is something that all of us get into. You know, what is the technicality? And I know a lot of devotees tend to ask this. Which is the best name to chant? Should exactly. we chant Om Shri Sai Ram or Jai Sai Ram? Or, you know, should we chant the Sai Gayatri? Or, you know, is it enough if I chant the Gayatri? I think it's coming from the mind. The mind always looks at, you know, where can I get the best dividend from, right?
Best dividend with the least effort.
Right.
That's which is the most powerful name.
Right. And that's always we think of that. But Swami's reply is so simple. And Swami says, which form you love, which deity that you're able to relate to, I think that is all that matters.
Mm.
And don't think about, you know, will this name save me more than that name? Or, you know, when you're scared, you should chant this name. When you're, you know, if you're scared of people, you have to chant this name. If you're scared of ghosts, you have to chant this name.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, whichever name you're able to relate to with love, that is all that matters.
In fact, a conversation to that effect itself happens next. Because Hislop then asks, what is the correct way to chant Om? And Swami says, the sound of Om is A, U and M. A starts softly from the throat. It is the earth. U comes from the mouth and the sound rises in volume. The M is sounded with the lips, with decreasing volume. Like a plane heard distantly, increasing in sound as it approaches and fading with distance. That is how the Omkara is chanted. A is the world, U is the heaven, and the M is divine beyond all senses. And then Hislop asks, suppose one fails to achieve this perfect pronunciation? Swami says, the perfect Om is not too important if there is love. Love is the bond of devotion between a mother and child. And if the child cries, the mother does not worry if the cry is discordant. She rushes to the child and cares for him. The Divine Mother is in every place. Swami is here, but the Divine Mother is everywhere. So everybody has a chance. As soon as a person starts to yearn for God, the Divine Mother is there to respond with grace. In all these matters, love is vital. Devotion to God means love of God.
Right, and I think there can be no better answer than this for that question of, you know, how do you chant? I don't recall where Swami says this. I mean, I've been not able to find the reference, but there is one of the discourses. It was during one of the world conferences or the youth conference where someone asked this question about the Gayatri Mantra. You know, they say there are people who sing Gayatri Mantra, and there are some people who say that you should not sing it. It's, you know, it'll accrue sin upon you if you sing. There's one particular meter and only that way it has to be chanted. So some devotee was asking Swami, is it wrong to sing Gayatri Mantra or chant it in such a way? And Swami's response to that was very similar to this. Swami said, see, Gayatri is mother. He said, will the mother say that you have to call me by my perfect intonation and name and only then I will respond to you? The mother only looks for that, you know, if the child seeks the mother's love with that kind of dependence and with that kind of faith, that's all the mother will look for. Right, and I think only Swami can reply like this, you know, with that authority. Otherwise, I'm sure each one of us, I mean, this is not to point at any devotee, even for us who know that this is the answer that Swami has given, sometimes this will go, no, this is the better way of chanting it. Or, you know, you should chant like this, or you should sit like this and chant, you should do like this and chant, which all is good, which probably helps in disciplining the body and mind. But what finally Swami asks for is only that, you know, are you doing it with love? Are you really calling out like a child calls out to the mother?
You know, Swami adds by saying, the real Om is spontaneous. It enters through the two nostrils, up to the forehead center, and out through the ears to the world, like the broadcast from a radio tower. I feel when Swami says that the real Om is spontaneous, it highlights another similarity between chanting Omkara and being a baby that's crying. The cry of a baby is also spontaneous. The baby doesn't plan that at this time in the morning, at this time at night, I'll do nothing. When it feels the need, when it yearns for the mother, it just cries out. Similarly, Swami is saying real Om is actually spontaneous. Of course, it's good you set a schedule. Morning 21 Omkaras, afternoon 10, 21 or 108, evening sometime. You do all that, that's fine. But the true Om you would have achieved only when it is spontaneous. It comes like a child yearning for the mother. In fact, I remember on one occasion, Swami had said that God has a phone number. And the phone number is these three Omkaras. It is very interesting because I felt three Om's being God's phone number is like an emergency number. You know, in the United States we have 911. In India to call the police we have 100, 100. Yeah. For the medical ambulance we have 108. Or similarly 101 is the fire department, I think. So all these very critical emergency numbers often turn out to be three-digit numbers. Like that, the most critical and most important is also a three-digit one, which is the three Omkaras. Swami says that is the direct line where if you call out, if you ring that number, I pick up and respond, Swami had said. So it's such a beautiful thing. It is best when we do it spontaneously, because as always, Swami's emphasis is more on the yearning than the style and method and how to chant and all that. In the how to chant, the most important thing Swami always says is chant it with yearning. Because if yearning is there, all else is okay.
You know, there is one of the Samukos discourses where when Swami is speaking about Omkar, Swami says this.
Mm.
The word itself is significant. The sound of Om itself is very significant. And Swami says, let's say you don't have any feeling at all. You know, intellectual or emotional, you just chant Om. Swami says it will improve your health. Because the word itself is like that, the vibrations of that name itself is such that it will give you better health. But if you technically know that, you know, this is the name of God and this is going to give you spiritual progress, Swami says if you chant it like that, it will give you progress in spirituality. Because intellectually you know what it is and you are consciously chanting it. Then the third thing Swami says is, but if you're only calling it out spontaneously, you're chanting it as an expression of your love, Swami says that is when it gives you the maximum benefit. So when Swami says that all that is important is love, it is not that, Swami, today I don't feel love for you, should I chant, should I not chant? Swami says even as a discipline, it has its own worth. But its maximum benefit is got when it is chanted with love.
Then Hislop says, is not Om a dangerous sound to use? I have heard that the Om sound is continuous and continuously sustains the universe. Whereas man breaks the continuity of his saying Om, and so his life is likewise broken. I have heard of a number of such instances, and it is said that Om is suitable only for sannyasis who have already broken their worldly ties. In reply, you know, Swami doesn't actually explicitly state that Om is not dangerous, but it's implied by what Swami says, because Swami says, what is a sannyasi? They are of three types. First is cloth sannyasi, who pretends renunciation by wearing an ochre robe. There are thousands of such in India. The next is the sense sannyasi, who gains control of his senses. These persons should never leave the world for solitude. They should remain in life where they may watch their reactions and know if their sense control is genuine or not. Then there is he who has surrendered to the Lord, dedicating the fruit of every action to him. In this sannyasi, ego has no place. His heart is pure. His senses become calm and are not affected by the opposites. If the heart is pure, then the continuum of Om sound will not be broken. And if something that seems bad does arise, then it is unreal, for only Om is real.
Right? And I think in that one statement, Swami actually defines what is Karma Yoga of Bhagavad Gita, right? Because that is the entire, they say that is the doubt that Arjuna had all the while. Because he was all the time asking, can I give up what I'm doing and take up sannyas? You know, that is the first question he has in the beginning. He wants to leave and go. Until the 18th chapter, he keeps asking the same question. And the answer that Krishna gives is what Swami gave you in one sentence. He says, true sannyasa is not going and sitting somewhere. True sannyasa is not changing your profession. It's not giving up what your dharma is and doing another dharma. It is only doing whatever you're doing with that kind of dedication.
And detachment.
Right. And that alone is sannyasa. And, you know, the same thing has been repeated here. And as you said, Swami doesn't directly answer that question of his om, chanting the om, dangerous. Because it has, I think in further down, Swami speaks more about that, right?
One more point here, you know, when Swami says that if the heart is pure, then the continuity of the om sound is not be broken.
Right.
I think it is in sync with what Swami said about a baby crying out. I was just thinking, all of us cry, you know, even adults cry. And when you need something desperately, you cry out. But why is it that Swami is picking a baby crying? I think the only reason is because of the purity that a baby embodies. And that's why I think as per Bharatiya tradition, till a child turns 1 year old, the adults are go and fall at the feet of the baby. They consider it either as the god or goddess. And they don't allow, you know, babies which are less than 1 year of age to even touch an adult's feet. I'm saying this because in the Bharatiya Samskriti, we do namaskar. We humbly bow down to elders simply because they have seen more number of life years than we. So therefore, we touch their feet as mark of respect. But not children who are below 1 year of age. They're considered as being on par with God. And that is because of the purity and innocence they embody in their heart. I think that is unmissable, and it's not just with children below 1 year of age. Of course, the children lose their purity and innocence as they grow up into adults. We spoil them or possibly contribute in the process of spoiling. But to different extents, they retain their innocence and they remind us so much of God. And I think that's the reason also behind why we at Radio Sai have launched this pre-birthday kind of celebration of my baby, my Baba, capturing those moments where our baby, you know, usually under 4 years of age, have reminded us of Swami through the bhajans they chant or through the sweet things they do, maybe kissing a photograph of Swami, whatever. So, for those of our listeners who are unaware, please do look it up in our website. We are regularly posting these sweet, innocent baby moments where babies are offering their love to their Swami in their own ways. I think it's all being posted on Facebook as well.
Nice.
So you can also definitely contribute. And don't get disheartened if you feel that your child, your son or daughter is now 8-year-old or 9-year-old. In case you have videos of them under 4, you can definitely send those as well and we will feature them. So yeah, after that digression, I think we'll take a quick little break and on the other side of the break, conclude the remaining part of this conversation.
Hey. हमारा श्वास
Welcome back, dear listeners. And we were, before we took the break, the discussion was on Omkara and how it should be chanted. And Hisla was asking, is it dangerous to chant Omkara if you don't know how to do it? And Swami made it very, very clear. He said, you know, what is most important is the love with which it is chanted, with the feeling with which it is chanted. And Swami goes on to, Hislop goes on to ask this next question about, and this is about Soham. He says, Swami says that people make a mistake by not saying Soham with every breath. How does one do it? And Swami replies, Sa is he, Hum is I. And Swami is making a reference to, I think, some personality. Swami says, Yogi X, whom you mentioned, teaches to say Sa, Sa, 24 hours each day. Since hum is not said, the I, the personality, is supposed to subside. It is extremely difficult to do it 24 hours a day. And in sleep, it is almost impossible. Yogi X says he does it, but he actually does not. What is the use of struggling with a very difficult practice like that when there is an easier, more effective way? And then Hislop asks, well, Swami, putting Yogi X aside, I want to do as Baba says and say Soham with every breath. What is the technique? Is it said with each breath? Then Swami says, the breath is always saying Soham. The practice is to say So with every in-breath and Hum with every out-breath. Say it in thought. It is indeed to keep the mind fixed and quiet. After a while, it becomes automatic. During the day, say Soham. At night, during sleep, the sound naturally changes to Om.
I don't think there's anything much to add. I'll just continue a little more what the conversation goes on. Hislop says, so should one think he am I? And Swami says, no. The sound is Soham. It is not an Indian word or an American word. It is the sound of what the breath is saying. Of course, it's all right to appreciate the meaning of the sound. And then Hislop again says, Swami says that Soham is the natural sound of breath. Listening to my breath, it does not seem to me that I hear the sound of breath in that way. Swami responds, the sound through the nose and mouth are mixed with the mind or idea and therefore may be heard in various ways. The fact is that when the mind is without movement and the breath is perfectly spontaneous and natural, the sound of that breath through the nostrils is Soham. Breath through the mouth goes into the stomach. So here, Swami says that Soham is not like a word with a meaning. It's not an English word or a Sanskrit word. It's onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia meaning it's a
sound-based word.
Yeah, sound-based word. A word that is based on a sound that is heard. And Swami says, actually when you breathe Soham, that is how it is. And again, it's not any and every breath. When you're most calm and peaceful and your breathing is spontaneous, then it is Soham. I find it a little bit paradoxical here, Prem, because I have noticed that the minute I become aware of my breath, my breathing changes. The spontaneous breathing is very, very difficult to find because it's like that, what is that we have in quantum physics, that the uncertainty principle,
mm-hmm.
where the moment you start observing, the observer starts influencing the phenomena. In the same way, I have seen that it's only for a fraction of a second you are able to observe what is meant by spontaneous breath. Because the moment you start observing, it changes. It becomes regular and regular in the sense it becomes different. And in those few brief moments when I manage to observe the spontaneous breath, I realize that the spontaneous breath is not actually very deep. But when we consciously breathe, we take in deep and out. And I think that's why Swami is saying that when you breathe like, yeah, it doesn't sound like Soham. If I do, it doesn't sound like Soham. It sounds like some, you know, steam being let out. But Swami says that when you're spontaneously breathing, Unfortunately, it happens unconsciously for 99.9% of the time. But that is the soham thing. So if we are able to consciously breathe in a manner which is spontaneous, I think we will be able to experience this. This is not what Swami is saying. This is just my addition from my experience. But Swami makes it very clear that soham is the sound of our breath. And sound is the primordial. It is not about the word. Even Omkara, it is a sound. It is not those letters or the symbol Om. It is a sound, because sound is the subtlest among the five elements, earth, water, fire, air and space. The subtlest is space, and space has only one attribute, which is sound, which they say is Om. That's why, you know, whether it is the when we pick up a bowl or a glass and put it to our ear, that kind of a closed space makes us hear that Omkara. So it is the subtlest, and that's why sound is considered to be the beginning of the universe, the Big Bang. Because God is subtler than the subtlest. When that subtle became gross, the first manifestation was through sound, which we in science call as the Big Bang. And then with sound came, after sound came the other attributes, and that's how the other five elements are constituted. So Swami says soham is a sound of breath, and we have to focus on that.
And I think Swami also clears this misunderstanding, at least I think it helped me, when oftentimes when Swami would say that you have to chant soham, we think that it is a 24 hours you have to keep doing that. Swami says it's not necessary to do that. What Swami says here is whether you chant or not, whether you remember or not, that is what your breath is doing. The whole idea is to bring your mind to what is happening with the breath. And somewhere earlier in the conversations, Swami was speaking about meditation, and Swami answered that question on whether it is important to concentrate on the breath. And Swami said that's a very good initial practice, because that concentrates the mind, that calms the mind. So Swami is saying the same thing here. He says that, you know, say it in thought, it is intended to keep the mind fixed and quiet. And then while it becomes automatic during the day, you think soham as meaning this, right? You try to go back behind the essence of that thing. And very beautifully, Swami says, in the night, the sound naturally changes to Om. Because Swami says, even when you look at it from the point of view of what soham stands for, Swami would say, you know, I and he exist. And you're trying to bridge that through this breath. And Swami would say that breath is life. And Swami had just said that sometime before. So you say, you know, breath is life and life is God. And that's how
breath's
this
God.
Me and him, you're connecting through this soham. And when you go into deep sleep, Swami says, there is no ego. And when there is no ego, there is no separation between the divine. And Swami says, then it becomes Om. And I think in a discourse also, Swami says that Saha and Aham is what becomes Soham. When there is no Saha and there is no Aham, he and me, then only Om remains, Swami says. And Swami is saying that this is not necessarily for chanting, or you should constantly keep saying soham. It is just for being aware that this is the message that, you know, nature itself gives you. That's what Swami says. And as you said, it's more of the spontaneous breathing, and not necessarily, I think that would be weird if we start trying to breathe with soham as, you know, saying it out aloud.
And it's very difficult also, you know, I found it challenging how to observe one's breath, how to focus on one's breath without actually altering one's breath. The minute you start focusing on it, it starts getting altered. It becomes unusually disciplined, and it becomes longer. The number of breaths we take normally is much higher when we're doing it spontaneously. You know, just to conclude this one theme, there's one last little question and answer that takes place. Maybe we'll go through that and then conclude this session. Hislop says, Krishna told Arjuna to sound Om in the mind. And Swami replies, Om is in every place, mind, tongue, heart, etc. First sound Om on the tongue and then in the mind. The sounding of Om 21 times is important, because it symbolizes the five outer senses, the five inner senses. I think this must be the Karmendriyas and Jnanendriyas.
Right.
The five lives, or the five elements, which is earth, water, fire, space and air.
Right.
And the five sheath, the five koshas, which is Anandamaya, Vijnanamaya, Manomaya, Pranamaya and Annamaya Koshas, and finally the Jiva. So that is the reason why we chant Omkaram 21 times. Swami says Om is everywhere, and I mean, with that the discussion on the Omkara concludes. It definitely shows that Om is something very, very powerful, something very special, and we can benefit from it even if we don't understand all the subtleties and complexities associated with it.
In fact, Swami has extensively spoken on Om. I think once for some purpose we had compiled, there are at least 5 or 4 discourses purely on Om, which Swami has spoken during the summer courses and sometimes during the conferences and all that. Swami has given enormous importance to that. And for those of us who are very, very fond of being secular, I think that becomes a name which is so universal in that sense, the name of God which is not associated to any form. Some would say there is no form for that Om. You can just think of the God who nourishes everything, God who sustains everything in the world. And that sound stands for Om. As Swami would say, I think there's this one of the Upanishads where it comes, the Upanishad where it's a dialogue between Shvetaketu, the son, and Uddalaka, the father, where the father asked the son, he said, have you learnt that by learning which you know everything? And the son, who's supposed to be a scholar, he's supposed to be a world-renowned scholar, he's surprised because, you know, in all his learning, he's never come across anything like that. And then the father, you know, it's a beautiful story and allegory where the father takes the son to a garden and he shows it's a grove of many, many trees. And he asks, where did all this come from? The son is waiting for the answer. And the father says, pick up that seed. So he picks up that seed and he says, break it. And when he breaks it, it's a seed which actually has, I mean, it's not a seed. It's a core which has 4 seeds in it. And then the son says there are 4 seeds in it. And he says, break the seed. So he breaks the seed and the father asks, what is there in it? And the son says, there's nothing inside. It's empty. And then the father says, from that emptiness, this entire forest has come. He says, because all of these trees have come from seed. And he says, that emptiness is the pranava from which everything has come. So it's the primordial name of God in that sense. So Swami would often refer to that Upanishad and speak about it. And a very simplified explanation of that entire thing Swami gives here.
On that note, dear listeners, we will bring this satsang to a close. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you were enlightened by it. We will again continue with the conversation because as we feel sincerely in our hearts that it covers a wide range of topics of great interest to different people in different stages of their life, it's definitely benefiting us so much, and we are grateful to Swami for the same. We offer this effort of ours at His lotus feet and pray that He accept it and bless us to remain in His thought, always thinking of Him, sharing His love, yearning to become one with Him, and finally becoming one with Him. We will conclude with a song, on the other side of which, as always, you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
കാലം കൽപ്പനയാൽ ചമയ്ക്കുന്ന മായാ പ്രപഞ്ചത്തിലെ കാണാ സ്വപ്നങ്ങൾ തേടുന്ന മർത്യർ നാം എത്തുന്നു ദുഃഖാഗ്നിയിൽ വാടിത്തളർന്ന മനസ്സും പദങ്ങളും തോരാത്ത കണ്ണീരുമായി വാഴുന്നവർക്കു ശരണം സായീശപാദാംബുജം സായീശപാദാംബുജം ശ്രീസായിനാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീസായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീസായിനാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീസായി പാദം അണിയേണമേ സദാ അടയൂ മനമേ അടയൂ മനമേ അതുവഴി സായുജ്യം ശ്രീ സായി നാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ ഭരദ്വാജ ഗോത്രത്തിൽ ആപസ്തംഭസൂത്രത്തിൽ ഈ ഭൂമി അവതീർണനായി ഭരദ്വാജ ഗോത്രത്തിൽ ആപസ്തംഭസൂത്രത്തിൽ ഈ ഭൂമി അവതീർണനായി പ്രണവസ്വരൂപന സത്യനാരായണൻ പ്രപഞ്ച നികേതന ധർമ്മപരായണൻ പ്രണവസ്വരൂപന സത്യനാരായണൻ പ്രപഞ്ച നികേതന ധർമ്മപരായണൻ നിത്യം സത്യം തിരുദർപ്പമാക്കി അമരുകയല്ലോ നിത്യം സത്യം സ്വാമി ശ്രീ സായി നാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ ണയാതെ മണിമയ പ്രഭതൂകും സ്നേഹാങ്കുരം തെളിയേണമേ ആത്മാവിലണയാതെ മണിമയ പ്രഭതൂകും സ്നേഹാങ്കുരം തെളിയേണമേ അമൃത സമാനമം ദർശന ഭാഗ്യവും അനുപമ ശാന്തിയും അടിയനു നൽകണേ അമൃത സമാനമം ദർശന ഭാഗ്യവും അനുപമ ശാന്തിയും അടിയനു നൽകണേ നീണാൾ നിന്നിൽ നിറയുന്ന ഭക്തി അരുളേണമേ നീണാൾ നിന്നിൽ സ്വാമി ശ്രീ സായി നാമം ത്രിമുണിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി നാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ അടയൂ മനമേ അടയൂ അതുവഴി സായുജ്യം ശ്രീ സായി നാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി നാമം മൊഴിയേണമേ സദാ ശ്രീ സായി പാദം പണിയേണമേ സദാ